This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Movie top 10 this week. By the way, reviews coming out 16 blocks and Don't Come Knocking, which we mentioned when we talked to Wim Wenders last week. Enron, the smartest guys in the room, and Slither. Which is on a lot of posters around my way.
Anyway, is it?
Yeah, top 10. And of course, it's...
I haven't seen the posters. What's on the poster? Okay. What can they possibly put
on
the poster?
What you can see is a bath.
Yeah.
A woman's leg.
Okay.
And some kind of slug.
Okay.
Which is creeping into the bath somewhere further up the bath.
Yeah, it's a rip-off of the Cronenberg Shivers poster in that case.
At 10, Tristan und... Isolde.
Yeah, Tristan plus Isolde, which I think is put in there, so it's like Romeo plus Juliet. A long time Ridley Scott project, which ended up being directed by Kevin Reynolds, and it's an older version of Romeo and Juliet, which benefits from Sophia Myles, who I think is very, very good and is, according to all the magazines, now going to be a rising star, despite the false step of Thunderbirds, which I liked. But it's much too modern for its own good. It has completely anachronistic poetry, and no matter how much mud you throw around, I don't believe that in the Dark Ages they had picnics.
Anachronistic poetry.
We covered this in some depth last week.
I just didn't want to
get into the whole thing about naming the dates again because it really bothered you.
American Haunting, not that much.
You were Googling what's the dates of the Dark Ages
American
for the whole second half of the show.
American Haunting, something to keep my mind busy. Yeah. American Haunting at 9.
Based apparently on the allegedly true story of the Bell Witch case, but really based on the fact the director grew up watching... The Exorcism, you know, The Exorcist, has seen Exorcism of Emily Rose, seen Abby, seen Audrey Rose, seen all those other films. Let's do them all together in a hut with a set from The Village and Donald Sutherland. There are a few creepy moments, but it's pretty throwaway.
At 8 Below.
Just rubbish, I thought. It's a movie about a whole bunch of dogs being left behind in the Arctic, and are they going to survive? And its major problem is that it says things like, 10 weeks alone, 11 weeks, and you think this is the amount of time I've been in the cinema, surely. And then one by one, the dogs start to fall. So even for the kids, it's too grisly for the kids and it's too dull for the grown-ups. And it's directed by Frank Marshall.
At 7, Inside Man.
Intelligent, smart, stylish thriller from Spike Lee, but not any great depth. But I am now very intrigued by his Hurricane Katrina documentary, which, as you remember on this show, he revealed includes testimony from people who do believe that the levees in New Orleans were detonated by the government.
Yeah,
no,
right.
I'm not laughing at it.
I know.
I think conspiracy theories are interesting, if nuts.
At 6, Take the Lead, or Take the Lead, conceivably.
It's not as good as the documentary on which it was based, was what I... you know, said last week, and I have to say it's still true. That Mad Hot Ballroom documentary is really cute, and it works with kids as well, and it works because it's a documentary, but the idea just doesn't translate so well to drama in the same way that Spellbound was a lovely film, and then when it became that ridiculous Richard Gere thing, spelling B-season, you know, it just all fell apart.
She's the Man at 5. Very good movie. A recommendation.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
From my house.
It's the best...
Film ever.
It's the best film ever. Yes, that's what it is. It's, you know, it didn't work for me. I'm assured that it's based on Shakespeare. You may know the RSC are currently doing all of Shakespeare's plays, so maybe one should take it in as part of that.
If you're a 12-year-old girl,
which I'm not, I'm a 42-year-old old fart. I didn't get it.
American Dreams at 4.
It's weird that somebody has made a mainstream comedy which has as its central character, on the one hand, Hugh Grant playing Simon Cowell, on the other hand, Dennis Quaid playing the American president, and in the middle of it all, a suicide bomber of comedy stylings. I mean, it's very odd. It's not as funny or as edgy as it ought to be, but there is something quite audacious about the guy who made American Pie making a comedy about a suicide bomber. And moments of it work, but a lot of the time you sit there thinking, I just can't believe they're doing this. It's gone in at number 4. Which is not what you'd expect from a big, ritzy, glitzy comedy with that kind of heritage. But I did say last week, I don't think it's going to do particularly well because people are just going to be put off by the subject.
3 this week, Scary Movie 4.
Is this it now? The posters say the last installment in the trilogy, which is a gag, you know, which is not that funny because, incidentally, that gag comes from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Because if you remember, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish was the 4th in the trilogy. And then the one after that, was it Long Dark Tea Time and the Solar? Is that a Dirk Quickly one?
That's a Dirk Quickly
Which
one.
Was described as the 5th installment in the increasingly badly named trilogy. So that joke's been done. So even the joke on the poster has been done before. Better.
So not that good. No. Trailer's fun.
Really? Well, the trailer's probably got all the good gags in it.
Dirk Gently.
Dirk, what did I say? Dirk Quickly. Dirk McQuickly, isn't it? As Dirk McQuickly is one of the Ruttles. There's one of the Ruttles.
Yeah, but Stig O'Hara
and Dirk
that.
McQuickly. That's why I said that.
Silent Hill at 2.
Yet another film based on a computer game that doesn't have a story. And please stop sending me letters saying that I'm blaming the computer industry for the decline of Hollywood. I am not. Listen, okay? Engage brain now, okay? Here's what I'm saying. Making movies out of computer games doesn't work. It doesn't mean computer games are bad. Computer games are fine and dandy and brilliant as computer games. I've never played one. I don't know anything about them.
There's
that's
the
fine.
Key.
If no, fine. Computer gamers, I'm not criticizing computer games. Please listen to what I'm saying. That's fine. It's the movies based on computer games that suck. Now stop sending me annoyed emails saying that I'm criticising computer games. I'm not!
I bet you don't shout on News 24 later. Steve on this says, Mark is very wrong about Silent Hill. I saw it by myself in the cinema and found it to be very creepy and enjoyable. Who cares if it was a computer game? It didn't ruin any of the entertainment for me. And isn't the entertainment factor all that really matters?
It would be entertaining if it had a story, if it had a narrative. Here's what happens.
No,
I'm not going to spoil it. A woman has a child who is distressed, and she thinks the best way to fix this is to take it to a ghost town. So she takes the child to a ghost town where a bunch of stuff happens, not in any coherent order, not in anything resembling a narrative arc, not in anything that you could be described as the development of a story, but a bunch of stuff, because it's the stuff in the computer game that you navigate yourself around, that you make order of. Put it on the screen. I'm sorry, Christoph Gans has a great visual style, but he needs a script. Roger Avery should be ashamed of himself. You don't work on Pulp Fiction, which is beautifully structured, and then hand in Silent Hill and take the check, thank you very much. I mean, you know, they must all be thrilled because it took money. But hey, as a piece of art, it's just all over the place.
John in Airdrie, having heard your recent review of Silent Hill, put me in the mood for a decent horror movie, yeah. So I didn't go and see Silent Hill. I went to my local video store and I hired The Descent.
Oh, great.
A truly awesome movie showing that you don't have to have a huge budget to make fantastic horror.
Exactly. It's an absolutely extraordinary piece of work. From the design point of view, it is one of the best production design movies of last year, despite the fact that it cost nothing at all. And it's all meant to be shot in this incredible cave system. And in fact, it's all shot in a studio with the caves are made of polystyrene and glue. And it's beautifully lit.
Could you argue, in the same way that I would argue that the best Python films had the smallest budget?
Yes.
That some of the best horror has the smallest budget?
It's often the case, because when you feel like you're working on the edges and you're really having... I mean, that's one of the great things about horror. It's one of the great things about genre movies. There are certain elements that you have to put in order for the movie to break even. But if you don't overspend, and if you do those things, whether it's an erotic thriller or whether it's a horror movie, it's fine. Okay, here are the things that you need. Beyond that, do whatever you want, but don't overspend. You know, Roger Corman made some of the very, very successful horror movies for like $500,000. I mean, admittedly, he made some trash for $500,000 as well. But The Descent, I think, cost $2 million or something like that, and it looks, I thought, every bit as good as Memoirs of a Geisha, which cost $umpty-thrumpty million.
Umpty Thrumpty actually is, I think, has gone down in value since you used it last.
Has it?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that the Dow Jones?
An Umpty Thrumpty isn't worth what it used to be.
It's not worth a Google. Apparently a Google is a large number.
One with 100 noughts.
I didn't know this.
And a Googleplex is one with a Google number of noughts.
With A?
Okay, a Google... we haven't said the number one movie yet. A Google is, as a number, one with 100 noughts.
Right.
That's how big it is.
Right. That's really big.
I'm sure people will... correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right.
Tuning out even now.
And a Googleplex
is
a one with a Google number of noughts.
But isn't that... Okay, I'm lost, but carry on. A Google number of noughts is 100. You just said it's 100 noughts.
No,
100. Oh, I see. A Google number of noughts. I've got it.
100 has two noughts,
doesn't
it?
I've got it.
Okay. You brought it up. You started it.
You ran with it.
And the UK's number one is Ice Age 2. The Meltdown.
An absolute proof of my thesis that the art of narrative cinema is dying. It's a collection of sketches that have no join-up. At the beginning of the movie, oh, the world's melting, we better walk. Sketch, 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 sketch. You know what? It's not melting. It's all fine.
I think what people should do is, if they haven't seen it, go and see it. And then as you walk out of Ice Age 2, discuss loudly... Say,
the lack of narrative.
Excuse me, do you think the art of narrative cinema is dying?
Mm-hmm.
People go... What?
No, I know my kids enjoyed it very much. I laughed all the way through it, but it's just got no story. It would be better. I mean, you wouldn't find Pixar making a movie with that little story. John Lasseter would have sent them straight back to the storyboard. He would have said to the storyboard, which is called the storyboard because it's meant to have a story.
That's the top 10. There might be something new that might tickle your fancy.
Rather than doing Enron, because I don't want to sort of run out of time, let's very quickly do Don't Come Knocking.
We've got a couple of minutes.
No, that's fine, but I want a little bit of time with
this
Enron.
This is the Wim Wenders film that we spoke to Wim about.
Last week. It played at Cannes last year, and it has apparently been recut since then, although it looked like substantially the same film to me. Co-scripted by Sam Shepard, who, of course, also wrote Paris, Texas, which is probably still Wenders' most famous movie, that and Wings of Desire, because I think it's now officially against the law to be a student unless you've got a Wings of Desire poster on your wall somewhere. I think they just won't give you the grant.
Is that right?
You have to have that, Mark, and Betty Blue.
No one has a grant anymore.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, okay. That shows just how long ago it was that I was there.
A couple of governments ago.
Okay, fine. So, it's Broken Flowers on Horseback. Is that right? Are there really no grants at all?
No.
Okay, fine.
It is strange to find someone who is less tuned in with the way the world is.
But I'm proud of it. If somebody made a movie about the absence of all grants, I would know. Okay, there we go. Broken Flowers on Horseback. Sam Shepard is a cowboy, starring in a cowboy movie. Incidentally, where are they making this cowboy movie? It's a big-budget cowboy movie. Who makes big-budget cowboy movies anymore? People make things like The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, but those are kind of independent productions. Anyway, he's starring in a big-budget cowboy movie. He gets fed up. He rides off on his horse.
You could probably get a grant for making a cowboy movie.
Yeah, you probably could. Can I do this because I've got about 2 minutes for the news? Goes off, finds his mum. His mum says, you know what? You had a kid that you didn't know about. He says, I didn't know I had a kid. She says, yes, Butte, Montana. So he goes to Butte, Montana, meets Jessica Lange, who is a sort of rundown waitressy character, who, of course, you know autobiographically, Jessica Lange and Sam Shepard are, in fact, an item, which is why they don't usually work together, because one of them is at home doing the stuff, the other one is out working. This was considered to be a great pull at Cannes. Hey, Sam Shepard and Jessica Lange and Wim Wenders back together again. And you know what? It's all quite dull. It's one of those films. Wenders has a meandering way, which at times is very, very evocative. In that documentary, Motion and Emotion, there's a German critic who, he says this to slag Wenders off, but it's quite right. He says, all Wim Wenders movies come down to the following observations. Women are strange, aren't they? And children are strange, aren't they? Let's put another song on the jukebox. And that is what all of Wenders' best work is about. The problem with
if only you'd come in and said that last week.
The problem with the problem with Don't Come Knocking is it's kind of, you know, the romance of the Old West and the romance of the guy finding his son, but it's not Broken Flowers because he doesn't have the wit and insight of Broken Flowers. It's not as well directed as Wenders' movies classically used to be. I mean, there are whole scenes in which there's a sofa in the middle of a street and the camera wanders round and round and round it with all the air of a production that has completely lost track of itself. Tim Roth plays an investigator character who seems to have wandered out of another movie and could quite simply have been cut out of this film, which would have cut the running time down, you know, much more substantially. And Sarah Polley is wasted and Gabriel Mann is not very good. And you sit there thinking, I love Wenders, I love Alice in the Cities, I love Kings of the Road. I think there is a great heritage there. But, you know, the best thing he could do at the moment is to get out of America and get back to doing what he did originally, which is finding some kind of story in the Europe, you know, the European tradition that he first came out of. I mean, Kings of the Road is a terrific road movie. It is the classic European road movie. And I don't think he's ever found that again since. In many ways, Paris, Texas was both the making of him and the breaking of him. It's a great film, but since then, he's lived in the shadow of that, and this is nothing like. It's not so much a postscript, you know, a sequel to Paris, Texas, as a postscript to it.
A couple of parish notices. John Lasseter, who you mentioned, is on this programme on May the 17th.
But great. Ask John Lasseter if he thinks Ice Age 2 is indicative of the decline of narrative cinema.
Could you write that down?
What? You can't remember it?
I'll forget.
All right, I'll send you an email.
This from James. At St John's College in Nottingham, Dr. K's rant about people emailing him about computer games was possibly the most entertaining thing I've heard this week. But then I
had a slow week.
But then I happened to agree with him about most movies based on games. I had a similar rant in a seminar this week about a ridiculous article likening The Truman Show to the story of Adam and Eve in the Bible.
Really?
Yeah.
The Truman Show to the story of Adam and Eve?
Someone will explain it. I suppose Garden of Eden, kind of unspoiled, and then someone...
Yeah, except it's not. It's an artificial thing.
Don't spoil it.
Okay.
Ian Dave on this email, on downloading last Friday's podcast, I was intrigued to find that it was titled Kermode Crazy.
Right?
I was unsure if this title not only referred to the film of that name, but also referenced to Mark's current state of mind.
We should mention, certainly, the hundreds of emails that we got saying...
And they're continuing.
...saying crazy is called crazy.
C.R.A.
Because that's the initials of the sons are C-R-A-Z-Y. And I have no memory of this being in the film, but apparently it's not in the... It's in the end credits when they appeared. I was just dim. I didn't notice it, but apparently I was the only person on Earth who didn't. It's rather like coming out of Citizen Kane and saying, so what was all that Rosebud stuff? So there we are.
So having undermined your credibility totally, we might not bother to...
I'd rather that I did it.
Okay.
Than anyone else.
What else is new?
Enron, the smartest guys in the room, was nominated for Best Documentary Feature, and I imagine in that case was beaten by the Penguin movie, March of the Penguins. A scathing and very, very entertaining and intriguing documentary about the fall of Enron, the legal repercussions of which are still with us, I think, because isn't the Enron trial going on at the moment, or isn't there still
yes.
some... Fine, okay,
yes,
good. I only have a whiff of it because obviously I have no idea about current affairs, but I do understand that there is something still happening now. I'm looking to you to tell me what it is, but you're not going to.
Well, they're all in court.
Fine, there we go.
Is that good enough?
Yes.
That was from a court spokesman.
Okay, the documentary is based on a book by a journalist who first blew the whistle on Enron by writing an article in Fortune magazine that said that the company was overvalued. And what the documentary explains to people who know nothing about financing, which of course I don't, is that the root of the Enron problem, two things. One of them is this thing called market-to-market accounting, which I'd never heard of, and I imagine most of the audience never have heard of it. But it's essentially a way which allows a company to be valued not on the basis of what it's actually worth, but on the basis of what it thinks it will be worth, or what it tells everyone it will be worth, on projected incomes rather than actual incomes. That's really all you need to know.
Right.
That's all you need
Good.
To understand. No, believe me, that really
You've
is all you
already.
Need to know. No, it's very simple.
Five Live Money, Mark Kermode.
It's very simple. If I can understand it, believe me, a four-year-old can understand it, although it's a 15-certificate film, so a four-year-old couldn't understand it because they're not allowed to by the BBFC because the film contains strong language and some scenes in a strip club. So, moving swiftly on. Now, although the subject matter sounds rather dry, the documentary itself is thrillingly interesting, even if you have no interest in markets at all, because the motto of Enron was apparently ask why, although the more appropriate motto would have been, you know, what the hell? How is this happening? This company, which is clearly in terrible trouble, continues to post profits. And there is one absolutely marvellous scene shot on video. I don't know whether or not they knew it was being shot, in which one of the company's heads stands up in front of an audience of employees. And basically, this is at the point at which the ship is sinking. There's a great quote about the point when the Titanic went down, at least the lights were still on. As far as Enron was concerned, the lights weren't even on. As the company is going down, he stands up in front of a whole audience of the company and says, everything's fine. We had a blip. It's going to be, you know, I know what you've read in the press. Don't worry about it. It's all marvellous. Future is bright. Future is great. Everything's going to be terrific. Don't worry. And he says, and now I'll take questions from the audience. And he's been given a pile of questions and he opens it. And the first question is, are you on crack? And it's just a wonderful moment because that is literally the level at which the thing functions. If you've seen things like, you know, the feature film Rogue Trader, the Nick Leeson movie, which never really worked. It sort of fell about between two stools. But the basic premise of it was, if you lie big enough, if you just keep lying, and if you can keep lying through the bad patch, somehow you may be able to get out of it. But the problem is you lie and lie and lie and lie and lie, and then the bubble bursts. But in the case of the Enron thing, whether it's, you know, whether what they did was legal or illegal is still to be found out. But basically, the company expanded and expanded and expanded. And the suggestion of the documentary is that it expanded way beyond the point that everybody knew that it was all going to go completely down the toilet. And then just collapsed in this huge catastrophe. And you sit there watching the documentary, slack-jawed. Now, I've watched it twice. The first time I watched it, I had a little trouble following some of the more kind of complicated market stuff because numbers have always slightly befuddled me. But what brought me back to it the second time...
You were always given it in a grant, weren't you? So you never had to...
Well, exactly. So what did I know? I did was I did an arts degree. I did an English degree. As they like to say, English degrees, please take one. And what drew me back to it was the cast of characters, this extraordinary rogues gallery of characters who... through, on the one hand, being fantastically charismatic, and on the other hand, just completely bullheaded, managed to make this thing happen. You are also left in no doubt whatsoever as to the bravery of the journalism, of the journalist who first blew the whistle, who first wrote this article in Fortune magazine saying, I think that things are not right here. And boy, did she turn out to be correct in ways that even she couldn't have imagined.
Do you think people will... you know, spend their £5 going to see essentially a documentary.
No, it's not essentially a documentary. It is a documentary. It's absolutely a documentary. There are dramatised reconstructions in it, some of them in strip clubs, which, you know, but it is a documentary. But as we've all seen, documentaries can have a cinematic life. And to some extent, I think we do have Michael Moore to thank for that, although I find that obviously very difficult to say. It's like in the same way that Fonzie can't say I was wrong, I find it difficult to say we have Michael Moore to thank for anything at all other than annoying everybody. But documentaries have now got, and also the incredibly irritating Nick Broomfield. They do have a place in the cinema. And certainly in terms of intrigue, I mean, there's one marvellous moment in which it talks about power companies and power companies being privatised and power generators being shut down in order to affect the price of power. So blackouts. This was all to do with, you remember in California when Governor Gray Davis ended up losing out to Arnold Schwarzenegger. All the background to this is in the documentary, and it's fascinating and intriguing. But as I said, in the end, the thing that brings you back to it, it's not the numbers, it's not the accountancy, it's the characters, it's the sheer wonderment that something on this scale could have happened and been documented in this way. It really is very powerful stuff.
This from John. Can Mark explain why the Enron film has taken so long to reach these shores? I saw it in New York a year ago, and yeah, it is a wonderful film. Its commercial appeal may be limited, but surely that's as true today as a year ago.
I have no idea. I actually first saw it on a plane about 6 months ago, and then went back to see it again because I'd enjoyed it on the plane. But you know, you can't judge a film on the basis of seeing it on a plane. And I saw it again the second time, and it was every bit as good and made a little bit more sense to me as well. It's beautifully dramatic.
And Paul and Shipley, having just seen Outfoxed on DVD,
I think
it's one of the best documentaries on media manipulation. What are Mark's views?
I mean, we've got the Walmart documentary coming as well, and we are in an area in which there is real scope for documentaries like that to take money. It's funny, in a way, they always used to be the prerogative of television. The fact that they've made it into the cinema, I mean, the fact that the best DVD release of this week, for example, is Grizzly Man, the Werner Herzog, which is just a wonderful documentary about this guy, Timothy Treadwell, who lived amongst grizzly bears for 13 years, and on the 13th year, they ate him. And it's a great Werner Herzog movie about...
Was that in the script?
What? No, it's true. What do you mean it's in the script? It was in his script. Well, in the version of the film that I saw, there's a lovely and deeply ironic moment in which David Letterman has Timothy Treadwell on. He says, "Oh, Timothy, you know, we're not going to open a paper one day and read a story about you've been eaten." Cut to story about he's been eaten. But that's actually not in the video version because I think the Letterman lot took back the license for it.
Here's an email. You're not allowed to comment on it. At the end of it, Mark, you just have to say, let's move on to our next new release.
Okay.
From Guy and Claire say, just in the unlikely event that the good doctor's ego needs boosting, a bit of fan mail. We weren't big cinema goers till we became fans of the Kermode film reviews a few years ago. Since when, we've joined our local arty cinema, and now we make every effort to go at least once a week. We do our best to see Dr. K's film of the week, especially when Mr. Mayo disapproves of the selection and tries to get him to change it to something more populist. Thanks especially for Cash Hidden. We also joined an online DVD Cache. Rental. There's no accent. So if there's no accent, it's obviously Cash.
Just but mentioning then some, it in passing.
Okay. Cash.
For the French listeners will be shouting at their radio. Cache!
We also joined an online... He did say you wouldn't comment. Okay. Joined an online DVD rental company and last night finally watched The Exorcist. Neither of us being horror fans, we put it off for a couple of weeks. It really is a great film, which we would never have watched otherwise. Thanks, Mark.
Let's move on to another of the week's new releases, 16 Blocks, the Bruce Willis thriller. Basically, an upmarket B-movie with a budget, directed by Richard Donner. Very simple B-movie-style plot. Bruce Willis is a down-at-heel alcoholic. He's been referred to in some reviews as middle-aged, but he's not middle-aged. He's kind of retirement-age cop who, at the end of a very bad day and a very bad night and a very bad morning, is charged with a very simple job, picking up a prisoner played by Mos Def. How are we referring to him?
Mos Def.
It's
very straightforward.
But is that as in like most definitely? Is that because that's not his real name? His real name is actually like Bertrand Schnibble. It's something like that. He's not called Mos Def. Anyway,
Mos Def is fine. Yes.
Okay.
As in most definitely.
How hard can it be? And yet, of course, being the movie, it's incredibly hard because during that 16 blocks in which he has to get the guy to be able to testify, he is stopped by any number of people, led by David Morse as a crooked cop. And I'm not giving anything away because this is explained very, very early at the beginning, that what Mos Def is being taken to do is to testify against some crooked cops. And David Morse doesn't want him to get there. And they think that Bruce Willis is just going to roll over and play ball with them. But of course, this being the movie, Bruce decides that he is finally going to make a stand and he is going to make sure that Mos Def gets to testify. So he's going to travel the 16 blocks and all manner of stuff happens en route. Now, on the good front, I like Willis. I think he is an interesting actor. He is more than just an action hero. As you know, you look back through his career, you look at things like Mortal Thoughts, you look at Death Becomes Her, you look at Sixth Sense. You know, you look at Breakfast of Champions. He has always been more than just an action hero, although that's always what he's made his money for. Obviously, the director is an action director, and so consequently, about two-thirds of the way through the movie, it does descend into action heroics, which it doesn't need. There is also, I have to say, an absolutely appalling final act, which is one of those, we've written ourselves into a hole, how are we going to solve it? And I'm not going to give the ending away, but let me just say at this point, any movie that begins with a guy holding a tape recorder, I mean, it's like, I'm waving a flag here. You know how this is going to work out, okay?
It's like, as you've mentioned many times, if someone coughs.
Yes. They're going to be stiff by the end of the second act. It's just, how are you? No, I'm fine. It's just some flag. No, it isn't. No one coughs in movies unless they're terminal. No one has a tape recorder in a movie unless it's going to be used in the final act. Sorry, there we go. However, en route, there is some fun to be had. There is a nice chemistry between Bruce Willis and Mos Def, but the whole thing is stolen by David Morse. David Morse is just a terrific actor, and he's the gum-chewing bad cop, and he really gives it some edge. So you've got two-thirds of an all-right film, one-third of a very bad film. It can't quite decide whether it's a B-movie or an A-movie, but it's perfectly passable, and it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Mos Def, yes, by the way, his real
Bertrand
name is...
Schnibble.
No, Dante Terrell Smith.
There you go.
Now, just think, if you've been given Dante as the first name, that is fantastic.
It is great, isn't it?
Anyway, the person you might have been confusing him with is Vanilla Ice. Whose real name is Robert Van Winkle.
Is it? You know, the most scary thing is that Randy Van Warmer really is called Randy Van Warmer.
Mayo@bbc.co.uk if you want to correct any of this stuff, but I think actually most of the information is right, which makes a change. More with Mark in just a moment. Minutes time. What else is new?
Slither, of which the posters for which are adorning your street even as we speak.
Well, not just my street, I suspect.
Well, I haven't seen them down, you know, in the New Forest, but that's probably a council thing. Okay, so...
they have a special poster policy in the New Forest.
Oh, they're very strict. Very strict. Has he got horses on it? You're not having that down here, frankly. No.
Well, this has got bugs on it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, anybody.
Bugs, great big killer slugs. Unless, I haven't seen the poster, but that's what the film is, a great big killer slug movie.
I guess it is a couple of feet long.
Yeah, it is. Well, they start off small.
Unless
they
it's
get
just
bigger.
A very small bath.
The story is that there is a small town, America. The guy who directed this is James Gunn, and his CV includes Tromeo and Juliet, which is not good at all. I don't like Tromeo movies. There we are. Scooby-Doo, which I really enjoyed, because in the middle of doing the horrible Linda Lovelace documentary when I was in New York, I went to see Scooby-Doo and was in there with families, with kids, having a lovely time, so it was great. And I'm a big fan of Scooby-Doo now. And the remake of The Dawn of the Dead, which is kind of okay, but, you know, it's not a great heritage yet. Now you have this terrific throwback B-movie, monster movie that refers all the movies that I used to love. When I was growing up, you know, late 1970s, early 1980s, well, actually mid-1970s when I was growing up, there were films made by people like Frank Henenlotter, like Basket Case and Brain Damage. There was David Cronenberg's Shivers, which was the killer slug parasite murders movie. I loved these films. They were terrific. At the beginning of Slither, the camera comes into an American small town and there is a place called Henenlotter's Bar and Grill. Of course, Frank Henenlotter was the guy who directed Brain Damage and Basket Case. So you know you're in the hands of somebody who loves the same movies that you do. Meteorite hits the earth. Slugs come out and immediately infect Michael Rooker, who, of course, is the lead role in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Why do they pick on him?
Because he's the lead role in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. Right. And it's a film made for genre. Believe me, if you're not a horror genre fan, you're not going to get a handle on this movie.
Does it get scarier?
Yeah, it does. But there you go. It's toilet humour. It's big bugs and slugs. That guy is the lead guy out of Serenity, which, of course, as you know, it's a movie that exists because the fans made it exist, because after they killed the Firefly series. Because you had your man there from Buffy, Joss Whedon, you had him on the show, right? And he was great. And Serenity is a terrific movie. And that guy, Nathan Fillion, is really, really good actor and really good fun and understands exactly what is to be done in a 50s style 80s style bug movie. I mean, to some extent, it owes something to the 50s version of The Blob. Generally, it's the body horror of the 1970s and the scrungy New York grindhouse horror of the early 1980s. It's one of the few films I've seen recently in which I generally went, oh, yuck, oh, that's gross. I mean, really lovely to be given that, because it's the slugs are horrid and they're really slimy and they get inside people and they possess them and they create these body shunting changes.
Take quite a lot to make you gross out like that.
No, well, there are just certain things that I'm kind of slightly squeamish about, and the shivers like slugs causing these sort of bodily transformations that reminded me, for example, of Brian Usner's Society. Incidentally, if you've never seen Society by Brian Usner, stop everything you're doing now, go out and get it from the video store and watch it, because it is one of the, you know, the key texts in all this. Anyway, it's yucky, it's scrungy, it's nasty.
Can I just say, no one is going to do that?
It's kind of great. Yeah, they are. There'll be a couple of emails next week. I guarantee you somebody's going to go out, get Society, which I think I did the sleeve notes on, incidentally.
Coincidentally.
Because it's a work of genius.
No one.
How much you bet
it.
Me? No You've got one. A minute left before this. It's yucky, it's slimy, it's gross and queasy. And
£10 to Comic Relief if anybody does what you say.
Fine, £10 for every email.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, fine.
Finish £10.
Okay, and I just sat there feeling like a kid. I was lovely. I felt really young, and I felt like a 16-year-old sitting in the Scala with the Scala cat crawling across my knee, being shown a film with all the reels in the wrong order, with a bunch of other smelly goths who, like me, had no social skills and acne, but loved watching movies in which people's bodies mutate and transform as a result of large killer slugs. I mean, seriously, barf in your popcorn, laugh as you barf.
It's a heartwarming prospect for a bank holiday weekend. Movie of the week.
Sleeper.
Really?
Yeah. Would you want me to say Enron smartest guys in the
room? I thought that's what you were going to say.
No, Sleeper.
In an exciting double bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark, thanks very much indeed.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.